in the 70s and 80s. And most importantly, he has been telling stories to children, his own four children as they grow. And tonight, to those of us willing to enter into his stories with eyes wide open. Walt reminds us that it is in the telling of stories that we have the potential to greet and know each other through the stories that we are. So before Walt greets us through story, let's welcome him, Walt Wonger.
It's an old, old tradition, but I'm not an old, old person. I mean, I grow older and younger all the time, and I'm not sure which direction I'm going in right now. Tonight, wait, does this feel like a concert? Is this how a concert feels? No instrument here. Tonight I'm going to tell three stories. And Micah, who is staring into his popcorn right now, thinking that I don't even notice that he's staring into his popcorn, is going to listen to all three stories. In fact, all of you can listen to all three, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about each one before I tell it. Every one of the stories is going to be for children, and that's children from little to big to old to gray to bald. Some children are bald because they didn't start growing hair yet. And some children are bald. Why are you bald, Chuck? For other reasons. Between telling of the stories, I'm going to talk a little bit about them. And if the children don't mind, if you guys don't mind, I'll talk a little bit to the adults, but you can listen in, okay? And I'll tell you sometime, I'm going to tell them a little bit sometimes why I wrote some stories. I want everyone to realize that although Micah Niedner is sitting on the floor here, his parents are sitting right here. They think that they're going to disappear. But they're not. It's okay. Rebecca's on the floor too, and others. Okay, I have to ask now the young children a question. Is it possible for you to see pictures even if there's no picture in front of your face? How young are you?
Three.
Three. What's your name? Say it loud. John. John, can you sometimes see pictures even if there's no picture in front of your face? Can you see them in your head? You mean you can sometimes close your eyes and see a picture? Okay, that's very good. So if I started using some words, would you be able to see my words in your head but as a picture? If I said tree, can you see a tree? Good for you. What color is it? Green? It's your tree. And how tall is it? Really tall? Taller than you? Of course. Taller than me? Taller than me? Taller than this candle? This candle? And is your tree taller than this building? But it's almost as tall as this building. No. Is it as tall as that balcony, your tree? All right. We have a tree, almost as tall as a balcony, and this is the amazing thing. It's in the little head of that boy. A big tree is in little John's head. What do we call this? Now, I'm still looking at the... What do we call this when you can make a picture in your brain, even though all you got is words? What are you using in your brain to see pictures? Wow.
What is your name?
What is your name?
What? Penelope?
Oh, Natalie. Natalie has popcorn in her mouth. Natalie, say that again. What do you use when you make pictures in your brain?
Imagination.
These kids are smart. Rebecca, did you know that? Memory? Well, that's a piece of it. Imagination starts it. Memory holds it. Memory sees it and holds it. The reason I'm asking you all that is because I'm about to tell you a story. And I want you to see in your brains what I tell you in this story. Now, it's a very strange language. Some of you, in fact, I don't know if any of you has ever heard this language before. I'm going to use a language that if you think hard and if you allow your imagination to work, I want you to see what's going to go on in this story. It's not a long story. And it might even be a frightening story. But it won't scare Devin. It won't scare any of you because I want you to tell me, after I'm done with this story, I would like you all, you, to tell me what your imagination saw, all of you. Are you ready? Now, don't worry about the words. Just relax. If you're not sure what the words mean, don't worry about the words. See if somehow or other you can creep inside my story and begin to see it, even if the words are strange. Before I start my story, you might put your imagination out in the woods. We're going to go into the woods. Here's how my story starts. It was brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite and the claws that catch. Beware the jubjub bird, and shun the frumious bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the maximum foe he sought. And then rested he neath a tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. As in uffish thought he stood, the jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbling as he came. One, two, and through his vorpal blade went snickersnack. He left it dead, but with its head he went galumphing back. Ah, hast thou killed the jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, calloo, callay. She chortled in her joy. It was brillig, and the slithy toves did, well, you know, gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Lights! Okay, what did you see? What did you see? Who wants to tell me what you saw? Rebecca.
I saw something in the woods, like a boy, I don't know, like a young boy, going to like try to catch a fearful monster.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Micah, do you know what that monster looked like? Or what were you going to say? What do you see?
Popcorn.
John. Come here, John. Tell me what you saw in that story. Come here so I can reach you with my microphone.
I saw a choo-choo train with bird beaks and fire eyes on it going, ah!
I like that, fire eyes. You saw fire eyes.
Yeah.
The color of your shirt. Are you on fire? Thank you, John. Did you all understand my story a little bit? Did it make sense to you? Oh, you just came in. Did it make sense to you, Devin? Did you? A little bit? This is a really weird story. What did you think of it, Natalie?
I don't know.
Well, you know what? This is a story written by a guy who used to tell stories to little children. And sometimes what he said was, we can just make the feelings up from words. And children have such sharp pictures in their minds that they could see that monster in the woods. And at the very end, they could see the mother of the boy saying, how good it was you came home and you weren't hurt. Anyway, I thought I'd start with one of a different language. And I'm going to go to one that you understand. This is for children. But I have to tell the parents a little bit about it. Some of you were here on Sunday when Susan preached. And she used a piece of this story to talk about. But I want to tell you where it comes from. It's called the bedtime rhyme. My sister-in-law, Dorothy, has Down syndrome. She is now, I think, just into her 50s. Is that right, then? But I've known Dorothy since she was very young, when Than and I first started courting. And Dorothy was very sure of herself. When Than and I would sit on a swing courting, when I wanted Than to be my wife, and we would sit on the farmer's swing, on the back porch, looking out over the cornfields. which smelled so strong of the corn dust in the air. And the sun would be just going down, so the whole sky would look suffused with a sweet and romantic color. Can you see it, Micah? Can you see me sitting next to a very young Ruth Ann? Mm-hmm. Am I young? Yes, I am. I'm just putting my arm around Ruth Ann, and guess who comes out of the kitchen? Her sister Dorothy, who is very protective. Now, Dorothy's about this high, and in those days she was about this wide. Fan and I would be sitting relatively close on this swing, because I'm thinking that maybe one day I'll ask her to be my wife. But Dorothy looks at me and says, "What is this stranger?" She doesn't say it out loud. Dorothy comes around and faces us on the swing so that she blocks the view. I can't see the corn. I can't see the sun. She turns around like this between us, and there's very little space between us, and she starts to use her rear. Boom, boom, like this. She's going to protect her sister from this jabberwock with eyes of flame. Bam, 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 she sits down between us. Dorothy came to love me. Dorothy is so smart, not always with her brain, but with her heart. Dorothy understands all the things that you feel. And once when she was very young, what is your name?
Andrea.
When she was about the size of Andrea, I'm going to guess, Fan tells me this wonderful story. It's not much of a story, but a picture. That Dorothy, Andrea's age, in the living room, sitting on the floor, saw her mother come to her, which is Than's mother, and Than went up to Dorothy's ear and took it and just squeezed it and shook it, maybe even the cheek, just pinched that cheek and squeezed it. You could see the love come out of her mother to her child. "Oh, Putzel, Putzel," she said. "Oh, Putzel, Putzel, I love you so much I could just eat you up." Well, when Than told me that picture of this sweet, beautiful woman, Dorothy, I could never get it out of my mind. I wanted to say that to my children. And I thought of how many parents want sometimes when they put their kids to bed to sit on the side of the bed and grab their cheek and, maybe you're too old for Putzel, Putzel, are you? Shake my hand. "Oh, Putzel, Putzel, I love you so much I could eat you up." Well, you know, all you parents, you know there come these bad days. You know your children cry. And you know that sometimes they cry because you made them cry. You were just a little bit abrupt or you had to leave. That never happens in Natalie's family. And then you see them in bed and your heart just breaks with love for them as they are about to fall asleep. And you've got to have the words to love them. And Putzel, Putzel doesn't always work. "Oh, Putzel, Putzel, I love you so much. I could eat you up." So I put... Say what? Oh, that's Andrea's young. And what is her name? Emily. Emily, Emily, you look like a dessert. You look like a sweet confection made out of sugar. You look like, what is that stuff that they make at the fair?
Oh, cotton candy.
Cotton candy, Emily. Oh, I could just eat you up. Well, you know, it sometimes means that you have to give the words to the parents. And so what I've done is I've written them. This is dedicated to our first grandchild, who is only now just a few months old. His name is Noah Martin. And someday I'm going to say these words. Would you all listen when I read these words? I'll read them very slowly and quietly. And if you're a kid, think of your mother or your father coming just before you fall asleep and reading you this story. Now, there's some scary parts in this story. Be ready. But every scary part ends good, all right? And it always ends with, "I love you so much." The parents here, if you don't want to be the child, be the parent and think of how sometimes you really do want to tell them the story. Okay, this is the story. This one is for Noah Martin, our new little baby grandchild, and also for all of you. This is called the Bedtime Rhyme. You're in bed, all of you. Shh. You're lying down. All the lights are out, but there's enough here for me to use these words. Here we go. Are you my strongest? Are you my smartest? Are you my baby true? Are you my laughingest, loudest, and lastingest friend? Oh, I love you. I love your eyes like fireflies. I love your ears like boutonnieres. I love your back, your bones in a sack. I love your cheeks and all your teeth, your nose and toes and tongue and such. But you say stop. How much? How much? How much, my honeydew? How much do I love you? Lay down your head, sweet gingerbread, and listen. I'll tell you. If robbers should come into your room and take you far away, I'd put on skates and I would chase them back to yesterday. I'd clobber those robbers until they slobbered and all their teeth decayed. Then I'd bring you back in a Cadillac and hug you, my baby gray. Or if you should rise into the skies on a dream of feathers and wings, and if some star asked who you are and then scared you with fallings and things, I'd follow you in a gas balloon and a basket that's hanging by strings. I would tell that star just who you are, a kid who is smarter than kings, and then I would carry you, my baby blue, home from your wandering. If monsters made shadows outside your windows and rolled their eyes around, or if they should mutter and burble and bluster and frown the most frightening frowns, and if you were shivering under your coverings backwards and upside down, I'd grab my reaper, my vacuum sweeper, and sock those monsters down. I'd stuff them in stockings, in bags, and in boxings, and mail them out of town. Then inside, outside, upside, downside, on the roof, on the walls, and the ground, I would write big signs with underlines, "Hands off, my baby brown." This is the really hard one, though. This is the one I used to think about. Or what if an owl, or what if an owl, that midnight fowl, should fly inside your room and land right there on the back of that chair in a raincoat, two boots, and a broom, and stare at you and sing this tune, "To whom am I speaking? To whom?" Would you be bold, my baby gold? Could you answer that bird, "To whom?" And if you did, which name would you give for the one with the owl in the room? Your name? That's one. But you're not alone. If you call my name, I'll come. So you and me, that's two of we. But there's three of us here. There's three. Listen. Before that hoot owl cries, before the monsters roll their eyes, before you fly above the skies or the robbers bother with alibis, I'll sing you the bestest lullaby of all. Listen. Faster than I am and higher than stars, stronger than you are in both of your arms, here in your room all night while you're sleeping, kinder and wiser and best for safekeeping is God. Oh, that's the name, my baby true. That's the one. Oh, God loves you. From the brown of the ground to the blue of the sky, from the golden dawn to the gray of goodbye, from ear to ear, a million years, and butterflies for both your eyes, God loves you. God loves you better than I. Now snuggle deep, my baby sweet, and here's the kiss to make you sleep. Good night. You know about Greek plays, don't you? Greek tragedies. Doesn't happen in Greek comedies, just Greek tragedies. You know there's always a chorus, right? You know that the tragedian comes out and puts this big mask on, and the mask has a hole for a mouth, and it's a great big hole so that it's like talking in a funnel. Makes a big sound. So the tragedian comes out here and says, oh, woe is me, woe is me. And right away there's this little choir of people who come marching in from the side, singing a song about how woe it is for him. You know what I'm talking about? This is called the strophe, as they walk in this way, and then they sing, and then they go back. That's the antistrophe. And then as you go on and on, there comes the third one. They walk in like this. This is the strophe, and they're singing like that. And then comes the catastrophe. At the catastrophe, they all fall down. I'm just thinking while I'm reading my stories here that I'm the tragedian, and this is a tragedy. This is not a comedy. And I have a big mask on, and Micah is the chorus. Walking here and walking there, and pretty soon a catastrophe is going to happen. And he's going to sit down. That has nothing to do with anything. But I've got to tell you why I wrote this next story. And this is where you guys can listen in, little ones, because it has to do with you. Actually, it has to do with my daughter when she was even younger than you. And you'll know why I wrote it and why it became hers. This became Talitha's story. We have four children. Now they're grown, but at one time they were very, very little. Two of our children were born to us, and two of our children we adopted. If the adopted children were sitting here, you might be able to pick them out. Matthew, he's African-American, and you can tell that right away. Talitha, we adopted when she was 8 months old. She had a white mother and a black father. But at 8 months, they decided that they would give her up so that somebody else could take the baby for a while. And here's what happened. We had three children then, and we thought maybe we'll think about adopting another one. And we called up the adoption place, and we said, you know, we're thinking about adopting another baby. And we thought it would take a whole year, but they said, oh, really? We've got a baby. Just like that. You know how fast you can get pregnant? Just like that. We said, well, why don't you come up and talk to us? This is Indianapolis. So we got in the car from Evansville and drove to Indianapolis, and they said, look, this baby has just been given up. And they said, this baby already is beginning to know her name, and we don't want to put her in a lot of little houses because she'll feel so lonely and lost if she moves from house to house. That's what they said to us. They said, we really want someone to adopt this baby very quickly so that she doesn't become nervous or afraid. So we went home, Than and I, and we talked, and 1 week later we got into the car and we drove up to that place again, and we said, yes, we would like to have one more child. The man who was in charge of that place, his name is Ted Michelon, and you could always tell what he was feeling by looking into his eyes. He was so happy he started to cry. This is true. Oh, he was happy. He just loves giving children away when it gets to be very good. So he said, follow me, and Than and I followed him, and then there was another person following who was the woman that worked with us with this whole thing, and we went into a little tiny bedroom, but there was no bed in this bedroom. There was no furniture at all. It was an empty room except for a crib. We walked in this door, and there was Ted Michelon just crying his eyes out, and I walked in last, and I looked to my right, and right by the door there was this baby crib, and in that crib there was a peanut. Oh, I mean, it was a little girl, but she was all crunched up like a peanut. And she was so beautiful. You know, sometimes people say, when you're going to adopt a baby, they say, can you love the adopted baby the same as you love the baby that came out of your own body? And the answer is yes, right away. I looked at that little peanut and I started loving her. It was like I could feel it in my tummy, loving her. And she was sleeping. Oh, she was lying on her back. She had a beautiful head. It was in the shape of a light bulb. Well, it was, you know, it was all round on top like this, and somebody had scribbled on top, and they said, there, little baby, that's your hair. Just a little bit of black hair right on top. And then you come down from this forehead, and you see these beautiful eyes. Oh, she had such long eyelashes. Her eyes were closed with sleeping, and she had eyelashes almost as long as a cow. Have you ever seen cow's eyes? Yes, they have beautiful, beautiful eyelashes. She had beautiful black eyelashes. She had an eyebrow that it looked like somebody just etched the most beautiful black eyebrows in on this innocent face. And I started coming nearer and nearer to her because, you know, you want to smell babies, don't you? You want to get really close to babies and smell how good they smell. And you want to touch them and squeeze them. And so I'm coming nearer, and she has this little tiny mouth and a little tiny snore. She had like a little snozzle snore. Just a little burbling in there. She's sleeping so deep. Oh, and her skin was the color of butterscotch. I wanted to touch her. Now, I'm about this size, and I'm wearing great big glasses, and I have my mustache on. And so I'm leaning over this little baby like that, and my heart, I just, oh, Putzel, Putzel, I love you so much, I could eat you up. But I didn't say that because as I got really close to her, she opened up those beautiful eyes with those beautiful eyelashes. She opened up the eyes, and she saw me right here, this face. You know, like the whole sky was my face. And then she drew a breath in. She took a little breath in. And you know what she did? She screamed. She screamed when she saw me. She opened her up eyes, and they were so scared. She was looking everywhere, and oh, it made me sad. I jumped back. I mean, I loved her, but I scared her, so I jumped back. And she's looking all around the room, and I know what she's doing. She's looking for her other mommy. She's looking for people that she knows, and I can hardly stand it. So Than goes to her, and Than picks her up, and they hold each other so tight. And then our little baby stops crying when her new mommy is holding her. But she doesn't like me. Oh, no, no, no. She doesn't like me, and that worries me. Well, you know, we drove her all the way home, and Than was holding the baby. And this poor baby, I didn't know what was going on in her mind. Every time I would come close to her, she'd scream. And this is a long time. This is like a month and 2 months and 3 months. And I'm saying in my heart, what's going on in my little baby's brain? What is she thinking? What happened before she came to us? Is she scared? Is she scared of men with mustaches? Did I just scare her? What's going on? How can I talk to my little child? Because you know she is black and white, and in this world I have so much to teach her because other people could scare her too. Do you understand that? Oh, and then she made life really hard for me when I preached. I would preach and they would sit in a little church, you know, and I'm preaching. And then I come near my little baby and she screams. Well, you can't keep preaching when a baby is screaming like that. Talitha cried with everything. Tears came out of her eyes, snot came out of her nose, drool came out of her mouth, wax came out of her ears. Oh, she cried. And you can imagine, I'm the preacher, and this little kid is crying, and everyone in the church is looking at me and saying, okay, what did you do to her? They're all saying, oh, poor little baby. I'm saying, please, Jesus Christ, huh? Sermon. I remember once when a very old African-American lady was holding that little baby Talitha because she had really light skin, and she was holding her downstairs in the basement like this. She was holding her up and she was looking at Talitha, and Talitha was not crying then. She was looking back at this old woman. And as I walked by, the woman said unto me, is she one of us? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, child. She meant, is she black? Is she African? Is she one of us? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, child. And you know, sometimes I think when old people hug young people like that, young people, even before they can talk, they start knowing deep things. I think Talitha started knowing something very deep then about who she was and how she was. But at home, she would cry for reasons that made me wonder what happened. Once we were standing in the bathroom, and she was bare butt. You know, she had nothing on over her butt. And she was standing in front of the toilet, and I was in front of her. And she went backward like this until her little bare butt touched that cold porcelain. And she jumped away and cried. And I said, no, baby, it's not hot, it's cold. Why do you think it's hot? What's in your mind? What's happening to you? I had to learn how to talk to my own daughter. I had to figure out how she would listen to me and not be scared of me. So this is what I did. Very important. This is what love makes you do. I watched my daughter all the time. I watched how she moved and how she used her lips, truly. I watched how she crossed her legs and sat. I watched how she waved at flies when the important storyteller was telling stories. I watched how she would pick the little freckles on my leg. I watched her all the time. You have to watch to find out how people talk. And one day we were sitting at the table eating supper. And right over here was Matthew. And over here was either Mary or Joseph. I don't remember because Than was at the end and Talitha was in a high chair next to Than. And Talitha had a whole bowl of cereal which she put on top of her head. That's how she ate. Milk running down in her face. She was a really sloppy person eating. I was watching her. I was watching her. And she looked at me with those beautiful eyebrows. And this is what she did. Just suddenly. I don't even think that she knew she did it. But this is what she did. She did this. She did this. And this is what I did back because I was watching her. I went like this. And I saw her face change. She looked at me and she tried it again. She went. And I did it back to her. I did it again. And she started smiling. That was my daughter's language. It was eyebrow language. Oh, yes. Every time she raised her eyebrows, I raised my eyebrows. And I learned to do this when I was a kid, and I was really glad that I had it to this point. I raised one eyebrow. Boom, boom, boom. And she laughed because that was a joke. That was a joke. She raised her eyebrows back, and she said, oh, Daddy, you know I can't do that. And I said, I know that. I said, Talitha, pass the salt. She said, oh, Daddy, I'm too young to pass the salt. And we laughed together. Oh, I know we were telling jokes back and forth with our eyebrows. I said something like, Talitha, do you know that I love you? And she said, maybe. But this is what I did. I'm telling you the truth. First, I just looked at her until we looked back like that. Then I could get a little bit closer. A little bit closer, and she's not noticing, and I'm still smiling, and she's not scared. A little bit closer. Touch her. Get away. A little bit closer, walk on by, pretend I don't even notice her. I'm on the way to church. Pat her. And she doesn't cry. I start using language to talk to my daughter so she can understand what I say so I can teach her who she is. She has to know who she is because this is a very confusing world. Someone has to teach the children who they are because if they have a different color skin, you know, sometimes people make it very hard for them. So then she started listening to me talk, and I named all my children strange names. I named Joseph Vanilla because he was so white. He's the oldest, just like you. Mm-hmm. I named Matthew Chocolate because he was so brown. He was the brown bomber. He always landed in our bed, Fans and mine, between us every night with a bad dream, no matter what we were doing. I named Mary Strawberry because when she laughed and smiled, her face got so red. But I named Talitha Butterscotch. Beautiful butterscotch. And I could start telling them stories. I would tell my children many stories, but I watched to see which ones they needed. And I would tell that one over and over again. Now let me tell you two things, and then I'm going to tell you Talitha's story. We lived in an African-American neighborhood mostly. And Talitha early on knew that she was African-American, that she was black. The worst thing that her friends could ever say to her would make her just cry. They would say to her, you're not black, you're not black. And she'd come home just crying. And you know how she could cry, sobbing and sobbing. Once I remember she was at her girlfriend's house and her girlfriend's brother hit her girlfriend. Oh, it was hard for Talitha to see things like this. Hit her girlfriend hard. And Talitha came home, and in those days she was hugging me less and less as she got older, but she hugged me because she couldn't understand what a bad world this was. And it was times like that that Talitha would say to me, Daddy, please tell me my story. Always when the world looked bad to her or she was not sure of who she was, she would say, Daddy, tell me my story. And then she would live in that story. It wasn't just something she thought about. She would go into it. Oh, I remember a really bad Sunday, and Talitha and I are now walking to church, and she's old enough where she doesn't always want to hold my hand. But she knows this story. She always has it. Sometimes when I'm the one who makes her cry, I tell her that story because I can tell her I love her without having to touch her. But we're walking to church Sunday morning. It's early Sunday morning. We're walking down Gum Street, and on Gum Street you have houses that you call shotgun houses. A shotgun house is a narrow house with just three rooms straight away. And they call it shotgun because you could shoot a shotgun from the front to the back and it wouldn't even touch the walls. It's pretty cheap houses. We were walking past these shotgun houses and someone started screaming ahead of us. I thought it was like a man's voice because it was so angry. It was a, hurry! And we didn't see anyone. And Talitha got walking very slow now because this was a very angry voice. Hush, bottle! I thought we're going to come close to that house where that screaming is, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do for Talitha. Well, when we came up close, all of a sudden, a screen door banged open, and there flew out of that house a boy who was about 6 years old, 7 years old. He flew out backwards. He flew out backwards, and he landed on the sidewalk right in front of us, just sitting there, and out of the door did not come a man. Oh, no. Out came his mother, And she pointed at this boy, which is her boy. She pointed at her boy, and she called him a foul, bad name. And then she said this thing, which you can hardly understand anyone would ever say. She said to her son, she said, do me a favor. She said, do me a favor and die. And she went back in the house. Oh, Talitha stood beside me, just almost not breathing. Who can say such a thing? So Talitha then, she went up to that little boy who was just sitting there, and she squatted down and she said, do you want to come with us? That's all she said. I think she thought maybe to church or something. Do you want to come with us? And it got worse. That little boy jumped up and pointed at Talitha, my daughter, and he said that same bad word to her, and then he said, do me a favor and die. Talitha came up to me and she took my hand real tight then, because this is hard to understand. This is like the whole world exploding. People shouldn't say that to people. She was real close as we walked to church. And then she said before church, she said, Daddy, please tell me my story. She needed to hear her story. Not then, not in church, later on at night when it's just the two of us alone. And my story for her, you know, it's like a hug. It's like a house. It's a place to be safe. So then we would go into Talitha's bedroom as we did that night. And the other kids usually shouldn't be there because this was Talitha's story. This is her story. This is the way in which she would understand who she was. So I would turn the lights down a little bit low, and then I would begin to talk to her about this story. We always had a little ritual. We have to do a little talking back and forth so I can find out how bad or good she's feeling. So I would always start the story this way. I would say, once upon a time, there was no sky. And then I'd stop, and I'd say, Talitha, do you know what that means, no sky? And she knew. She knew, but she always said, no, Daddy. I like that. It's like catechism, you know? No, Daddy. And I would say, well, Talitha, no sky means it's like when you're having a bad dream. It's like a bad dream when there's nothing to protect you above and all the bad things can come down on you right away. It was like that. Once upon a time, there was no sky. But God said, I'm going to make a kid. This is the story, Talitha. God said, I'm going to make a kid. And God said, I'm going to love this kid. And you know what? You know what God did, Talitha? She knew, but she would always say no. And I would say, God walked up on the highest of high, and God said, let there be a firmament. And Talitha, all of a sudden, over all that was and was not, was this hard blue lid, a hard blue dome like a bowl turned upside down. You could go bonk, 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 and knock it. And all the bad stuff was on one side, and the space for a kid was underneath. Oh, and then God looked down, and all that God saw underneath this hard blue dome, which is called what? What is the name of that dome?
The sky.
The sky. Underneath that, I said, Talitha, all that God could see was water. And then I would always say this to Talitha. I would say, Talitha, how long can you swim? I stole the joke. And Talitha would say, oh, Daddy, you know I can't. And she couldn't. Talitha was genuinely afraid of water. I said, God knew that. I said, God knew that. God said, I'm going to make a kid. God said, I'm going to love that kid. And I do not want my kid to die. You should have seen a girl. God came down from the highest of high with enormous big feet. And God started stomping in the water. Boom! Boom! God started stomping in the water. God said, get back, get back, get back! Get back, oh, you water. Go back there and stay where I put you. Put you in the seas. God cried a loud shout, and the mountains started coming up higher and higher, and the water ran down the face of the mountains like silver lizards, down the face of the mountain like tears coming down, little tiny streams, and some of them stopped in blue pools, and some of them came together to make a whole river, and the river itself rushed into the sea. And God thought this was wonderful until God looked around. All that God could see of the land that was around looked like Eastern Washington. Nothing was growing. It was a desert. And God said, I'm going to make a kid. And God said, I'm going to love this kid. And God said, this kid's going to be hungry. I want my kid to eat. So God started making food for the kid. We always liked this part. If it was a good day, we would make really good food. God made oranges, and God made apples, and God made bananas, and God made peanuts, and God made honey, and God made... lentil loaf because we're Lutherans. God looked around and saw the trees and the grass and the flowers, but God said, I'm going to make a kid, and I'm going to love this kid. And how is the kid going to know my love if there are no eyes and there are no mouths? Talitha, Talitha, God made up a magic word. God made a magic word and said it to the air. God stood in the middle of the air and God said this magic word. God said, swarm, swarm. And all of a sudden it was as if the air blinked. It was like the whole air wrinkled. It was like the wind spit. And out of the wrinkles and out of the blinks came the birds. Oh, huge flocks of birds came out. Little tiny sparrows, great big geese, honkers and ducks came flying. And way on high was the hawk. And the beautiful bald eagle, which never has to flap its wings because it sails on the thermals rising from the earth. And the eagle with its yellow eye looked all the way down to the earth. And it said, God, it said, where is it? But God was already down at the water. And God said to the rivers and to the streams and to the sea, the same magic word. God said, swarm. God said, swarm. And it was as if the water started boiling. It started burping like a little rash on the water, and all the little fishes started poking their little noses out. You could see the little minnows popping out like this. You could see the trout with their bottle eyes looking around, making sure that there were no fish hooks anywhere near. You could see the schools of fish and the sharks out, and in the middle of the ocean was this huge fish, which is called Leviathan. We really like that fish, Talitha and me. Because I will always say, this huge fish named Leviathan sported in the waters for the joy of God. Oh, we love that. But Leviathan had a little bottle eye. And Leviathan was looking everywhere, and Leviathan was saying, God. This huge fish said, God, where is it? But God was already kneeling on the ground and pulling out of the ground the animals. All the good animals. Squirrels. Chipmunks. Beep, 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 beep. Rabbits, boom, by their ears. Leopards and lions, vroom, vroom, they go. And then we had several animals we really loved. The wolf, God would pull that wolf out, and the wolf would begin to bicycle across the world, running and running and never getting tired and looking to the left and looking to the right. And then God pulled by the short hairs the bear, Mato the bear, out of the ground. She came standing like this, and she looked left, and she looked right, and she said, God, where is it? And the bear said, where is it? And Leviathan said, where is it? And the bald eagle said, where is it? And God said, where is what? And they said, the kid. They said, where is the little kid? They said, without the kid, we don't know our own names. God said, well, I haven't made that kid yet. Oh, Talitha, you should have heard them animals. Oh, they bleated and they squawked and they roared and they snorted and they cried and they said, God, you've got to make a kid, because who will lead us without a kid? God said, all right. God said, time to make a kid. So God went walking on the shores of the sea. God went walking on the shores of the lakes. God went walking on the shore of Lake Chelan, and looked up and down for exactly the right kind of mud. And all the animals came, you know, and all the animals sat up, banked as if they were an auditorium, watching what God would do. And God was looking for the right kind of mud. And then God found exactly the mud that God was looking for. And so the great and mighty God, with all the animals, all the birds, all the fish, every walking creature watching, God kneeled down. And God started patting that mud together. God started patting a long piece of hunk of mud together. God punched it in the tummy. And two little arms shot out from the side. God pushed it in the tummy. And two legs came out from the bottom. God squeezed it at the top. And out came watermelon head. God started molding that head. God started making it sweet. Talitha, do you remember how Mama used to make bread? Yes, she said, she remembered. I said, that's what God was doing. It was like squeezing that mud like bread. And you should have watched how God became like somebody who puts pictures in jewelry, in silver and gold. God made the most beautiful little etched eyebrow, two beautiful eyebrows. The animals are saying, God, is that all? Is that all? They said, it's just a statue. And that's true, because for a while there was lungs in there, but they weren't breathing, and there was a heart in, but it wasn't pumping, and there was a tongue in there, but it couldn't talk. They said, God, is that all? You're just going to make a statue? And then all the animals suddenly went quiet. They said, what's the matter with God? The animals said, what's the matter with God? They said, is God angry? They said, is God sad? Well, they saw that God, looking over the beautiful face of this child, God was crying. And the tears of God were falling upon the face below. And God was rubbing those tears into the face so that the face below was shining and the face above was shining with the same light. But God was not sad and God was not angry. Talitha, the reason that God was crying is because God loved this child so much. And then God did something God had never done before. Down and down came the face of God. Closer and closer came the mouth of God to the little baby lips. Talitha, do you remember this? You should remember this, girl. God's mouth came down so close that God kissed you. Do you remember? And when God kissed you, God breathed out. And when God breathed out, girl, you breathed in. Same breath. God breathed it out. You breathe it in. You got to remember, girl, your little lungs like balloons, they started blowing up. Boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden, boom, your heart started beating. Girl, God breathed out and you breathed in. And it was the very same breath and your heart is beating. And the color started running into your face, the beautiful butterscotch color. Girl, do you remember this? You've got to remember this, because with the very first breath that God breathed into you, you shot it out in a sneeze. You sneezed in the face of God. And God went back like this. And you thought that the first thing that you ever heard was thunder. But it wasn't thunder. It was God laughing. God laughing because the child that had just been made had sneezed in the face of God. Bold child. Bold child. And then do you remember God started poking you? God started poking you. God poked you in the mouth and said, girl, I put a tongue in that mouth. Use it. God did not ask your mother or me. Just said, use that tongue. And God poked you in the legs. And God said, girl, I put run in those legs. Run with them. And God poked you in the chest. Do you remember? God said, girl, I put a heart in there. Love me, child. Love me as much as I love you. That's usually where my story ended, but I would always add this. I would always say this. I would say, because Talitha, Mom and I, we adopted you, but God made you. And so our daughter has two names. The one name is Talitha from the Bible, where Jesus took hold of the little girl's hand, and everyone said she was dead, you know. And God said, Jesus said, she's not dead. And Jesus took hold of that hand and said, Talitha kumi, little girl, get up. And she got up. Every time I told the story, she got up. But that's only one of her names, because the other name for our daughter is Child of God. That's her name. One more thing to tell you in the bright lights. Talitha learned her name, and she learned her maker, and she learned herself, and she learned her blackness, and I know this for a fact. Because when the girl was about, what, 6, 7, we took a trip out to Colorado. In Colorado, my father was having his retirement, coming out of work, I don't know what to call it, reunion for all of us. My father wanted all of us to gather in Colorado so he could give us the one thing he could bequeath us. And so we're driving out with the four kids, and Talitha's the youngest. And she's getting a kick out of this drive, and she keeps on saying, don't you love it? She looks out of the window, and she sees a mountain, and she says, don't you love it? And it's making her brothers just sick. Girl, shut up. Shut up. Don't you love it? Shut up. We got out to Colorado. My father, their grandfather, stood on the mountain and is just like a prophet. The wind blew his white hair, and he said unto us, I give you all that I have left to bequeath you. This is true. He said, I give you faith. And Talitha jumped up and said, don't you love it? And her brother Matthew grabbed her and made her sit down and said, shut up, be sad, this is church. And then we got in the car and we were driving home and we went through Hayes, Kansas. Hayes, Kansas, no mountains there, nary a tree. Hayes, Kansas, no black faces there neither. We got out in Hayes, Kansas to eat some lunch in a restaurant. We all, six of us, went in and sat in a booth. And here came this waitress. She came with her little pad of paper and her pencil, and she stopped and looked in front, looked at all of us sitting there, and she didn't ask what we wanted. She said, field trip? Field trip? I said, no. She says, this all your own family? I said, yes. And she paused. She looked. She looked at Joseph, and she looked at Matthew and Mary and Talitha, and she said, adopted, right? I said, yes. This is a very smart waitress. And then she stopped one more time, and she pointed her pencil. She pointed her pencil at Matthew. Him, she said. And then she pointed at little Talitha, who was right beside me. Her, she said. They're the ones adopted, right? I said, yes. Good. She took our order. She was walking toward the kitchen. Talitha beside me, she leaned over, just like Micah does. She leaned over and she said to me, I know how she knew I was adopted. And I said, how? And Talitha got up and shouted, because I'm black! All of Hayes, Kansas looked at this little girl. She saw that she had an audience, and she cried out at the top of her lungs to the back of a frozen waitress, don't you love it? That's my story. That's my daughter. You're my audience. You're my children. And I think it has been a wonderful night.